The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
In the beginning was methane, ammonia, a noxious mixture of gases, a chance lightning bolt, and then suddenly a spark of life was struck. At least according to evolutionary scientists, that's the way science writers put it. Nothing startling about that, though, is there? Well, yes, there is. The startling thing is that so many millions of people actually believe it. They really do believe a story that goes sort of like a scientific genesis, you might say. It's an amazing story. Do you want to hear a little bit of it? It sounds a little bit like a section out of the Bible. For about 70 years, little progress was made in the understanding of the origin of life, said a science writer recently. But in the beginning, it goes, the earth was void of life. But there were atoms. Now, atoms are supposed to be very primitive and very simple, but is there anything really simple about an atom? The atoms of great abundance were those of the hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon. These atoms existed in simple combinations called molecules, and so, in the primeval Earth, hydrogen, ammonia, methane, and other simple atomic combinations hovered over the face of the waters, and there was light. That is, the ultraviolet rays from the sun, cosmic rays from outer space, radioactivity from surface rocks, heat from volcanoes, electrical lightning discharges, and so on. Under these diverse violent conditions, the various atoms making up the hydrogen, water, ammonia, methane, carbon dioxide, and etc., were ripped apart and put together again to form all kinds of new molecules. Those which were stable survived. Those which were not stable were bombarded and disintegrated to become yet new compounds or molecules. And finally, if they did stick together, they formed a more stable construction. So life did begin, they reasoned, through spontaneous generation. You know, a few years ago, when people talked about the idea of life originating from spontaneous generation, they used words like resident forces and natural causes, because here is the summarization of the whole thing. Evolutionary science is an attempt to explain how the entire universe, our entire solar system, this Earth, with all the vast, intricate, interdependent, and symbiotic systems of life existing side by side, where nothing really lives to itself or dies to itself, how all of this came into existence naturally, gradually, over interminable periods of time, without any interference whatsoever from an outside source. In other words, in short, how do you explain life without a life giver? How do you explain law without a lawgiver? How do you explain force and vast energy and power without there being any source for that energy or power? How do you explain the laws, if they are laws of thermodynamics, without any sustainer to keep things operating the way they are? How do you explain creation without a creator? How do you explain kind after kind in tiresome repetition down to the thousands and thousands of generations with no visible changes? Oh, surely there are certain adaptations, and I intend to get into that. But the problem of evolutionary scientists has got to be appreciated. They are a tenacious, a dedicated, and no doubt sincere group of men. Usually the space age science textbook dwells for only a few very quick paragraphs filled with perhapses, maybes, might have been, possibly, and so on, and then very quickly gets down into fossil life and that which is actually provable about what did once exist on the Earth. And that's provable, of course. So the explanation of how a creation came into being without a creator, they imagined all sorts of things. The Big Bang theory, the oscillating universe theory, the hot and the cold theory for the beginning of life, the green soup or the brown scum or the algae theory, the cracks in rocks, the dry, the wet, the hot, the cold, the polka-dotted air bubbles in the sea. We went through all of that, and I challenged, look, why don't you come up with one of your own? You come up with a brand new one that nobody else has even thought of. And sure enough, there are some new ones that have not even been thought of before. For example, now here's a new one. I hadn't even seen this. This came along just real recently as a scientific explanation for the origin of life on the Earth. So they had extreme dry, and they had moisture, or a primordial soup. They had a thin soup, brown scum, green slime. They had algae. They had cracks in rocks and polka-dotted air bubbles in the sea. Well, here's a brand new one. Dirty ice, seed of life in the universe? And here's an Associated Press writer who said, pioneering experiments suggest that living creatures on Earth and conceivably elsewhere in the universe, in effect, evolved from chips of the dirty ice of interstellar space. This according to a scientist in New York City. Now, dirty ice is the pet name that is given by space scientists to super cold grains of solid matter suspended in thin gases that pervade the space between the stars. And so the idea is maybe life came from that. Well, as I said recently, there are just about as many theories for the origin of life as there are theorists to promote those theories. And if you were to come up with one all by yourself, it might make just about as much sense and be just about as believable as some of the theories that scientists have come up with so far. Theologians say they can't prove there is a God. Evolutionary scientists say they have disproved the existence of a God. Actually, leading theologians have said, I cannot prove whether or not there is a God. I must take it on faith.
There's one question that has bothered man for centuries, but it probably has bothered you also. Average men and great philosophers alike have struggled with this monumental problem, but it's a question that needs answering. The question is, does God exist? And if so, how can you prove it? The free booklet, Does God Exist?, offers tangible information that will help you answer this timeless question. You'll learn how matter, intelligence, and design prove the literal existence of a spiritual God. Everyone has an opinion, but how many have the facts? There's no greater question that means so much to your own daily life and peace of mind. Does God exist? Now you can know beyond any doubt. Write for your free copy of Does God Exist? Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales.
Evolutionists agree that they must accept the doctrine of evolution on the basis of faith, just as much as do theologians say they must accept the existence of a divine, all-wise creator being on faith. And both of them are in error. The Bible itself absolutely commands Christians, believers, to prove whether or not there is a God. In the book of Romans, the first chapter, it plainly says in verse 18, chapter 1, For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold back. It should read that way in the original. You can check me by looking it up in a commentary in Exhaustive Concordance. The Greek word is katabalo, and means down in place or in time. It means to reserve, to hold back, to resist the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, or to them, as the margin has it. That which may be known of God. Now, God is invisible. People complain about that. They say, why does God hide himself? Why does God hide himself? Is there a purpose and a reason? And who is doing the complying with whose wishes? Does God really want to hide himself, or is he only complying with what man wants him to do? Why is God invisible? And do you believe in things that you can't see? Well, you believe in air, don't you? You believe in space, you believe in atoms, you believe in electricity. You can see what it does, but you cannot see it. Science isn't even sure what electricity is. They're only a little bit sure, and in some areas there is still speculation about what it does. But look at what the Bible plainly says. Verse 20 of Romans 1, For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen. In modern English, the invisible things about God are clearly seen by looking at the things that are visible. An invisible God is understood, the Bible says, by looking at that which does exist, the creation itself, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. The Bible says, prove me now herewith. Of course, that means try me out, test me, and I know that. That's back in the book of Malachi, and it's talking more about a principle of finances, but it's talking about whether or not a person is willing to put God's promises to the test as to whether he will really come through with what he has promised or whether he will not. The lesson of Abraham, isn't it? Abraham was fully persuaded that whatsoever God had promised, he was able to perform. You know, this world has gone a far piece from the time of Abraham. Oh, we believe General Douglas MacArthur. He said, I am going to come again. I will come back. I shall return, he said when he left the Philippines. And people believed him. And there were big headlines and newsreels, and here was General Douglas MacArthur wading ashore on the Philippine Islands as the American invasion forces were landing and the Philippines were once again occupied by American troops. They believed Douglas MacArthur. Of course, Christ talks about coming back and nobody believes him, or very few. And even those who, this is difficult, and I don't want to get off the subject, I'll just say in passing that it's difficult to understand how people who say they believe in what the New Testament says about Jesus Christ can also believe that they are not going to be here when Jesus returns. Christ said, in effect, I'm coming back. But how do you figure that out with going to heaven where he is? Well, I'll leave that for later. That's another subject, a totally different subject. Not long ago, a lot of evolutionists gathered together in a conference. They represented several countries, and they agreed that the theory of evolution as it stands is incomplete. They wound up a two-day symposium in which they really gathered up their notes and rolled up their sleeves and got down to pretty hard-headed discussion. When they got through with it, Darwin's theory had been pretty badly battered, but they had not come up with a better one. But the point was this, and I quote from the article that came in a leading newspaper in the United States about the thing that happened. By agreement at the beginning, I'm quoting now from that article, there was no discussion of the influence of God or any form of supreme being, end of quotation. Even though they agreed that evolution was quite lacking in many respects and Darwinian theories were badly battered by the time they were through with it, they did agree in advance not to discuss any alternative. Their minds were made up. Don't confuse me with the facts. Now, you know, many people say the Bible seems like an out-of-date, antiquated book. That's because most people never bother to read it, and if they do, they're only reading it in maybe one of the out-of-date versions where the language is that of 1611. That's unfortunate. However, I will say that with careful checking back and forth inside the internal evidence itself, and with careful checking in many of the helps that do exist, that's still probably the best one. But it reminds me of a lady several years ago. I was quoting, I think, from the Moffat version in one section of the Old Testament on the World Tomorrow program on radio, and she wrote in quite an irate letter, and she said, look here, Garner Ted Armstrong, if that King James Bible was good enough for the apostles, it's good enough for me. And that's the way some people look at it. Now, of course, that came from the breeches and the chains Bible, the great Bible, was translated into the English out of the Reims Douay version, came to the English language about 1611, has come down with the these and the thous and some of the old King James English wording in it, and that's unfortunate. But people remain virtually illiterate of that book. Tests have indicated that vast percentages of so-called Christian church-going people cannot name the first four books of the New Testament or the Gospels in correct order. It's no wonder people say they can't prove God exists. If their own Christian leaders are saying there is no need to prove it, it's something you just feel. Now, that's not the way we approach other aspects of our lives. It's not the way we approach our paycheck at the bank. You don't go down there because you're not even sure the corporation exists or that they're going to pay off. You want to have tangible evidence about safety features in automobiles and airplanes. You want tangible evidence like regular inspection of elevator cables and the like if you're going to go riding up and down in big buildings. You want to see and to hear, to think and to ask who, what, where, when, how, and why, and get to the bottom of things as you live your daily life. You want answers to questions. You want to know, well, how did it get started? And who's behind it? And how come this? Have you never wondered about you, yourself? And how did you come into existence? Well, you know you came into existence as a result of birth. And maybe you've studied a little bit about that. Maybe you know what a fabulous, fantastic, almost unbelievable miracle the recreation of a human being from two parents really is, or do you? Is it really something that is palatable and easily believable to you that all of us, all we human beings with our own opinions of ourselves, and many times we have opinions of ourselves, it's kind of like the old adage that people used to throw out each other, I sure wish I could buy you for what you think you're worth, or the other way around, buy you for what you're worth and sell you for what you think you're worth, and so on. Well, we do. We think we're worth quite a good deal. So why then are we so anxious to turn around and believe in a doctrine that we came from scum, or slime, or slop, or swill, or methane and ammonia, or lovesick amoeba, or green algae, or atomic combinations. Why do we want to believe, as intelligent human beings, that our intelligence, such as it may be, came from non-intelligence? Why, when we live in a world where we see the complexity of modern communications media, the complexity of these jet aircraft and rockets and men walking on the moon, of our computerized space age technology that is, it just defies description, some of it. Inertial navigation systems and aircraft these days are the very same system, a computerized system that takes spacecraft to the moon. And when you look at the complexity and the marvels that man is able to create himself, and yet realize that man is able to create nothing that is superior to himself, how then can we believe that this order, this complexity, this harmony, this beauty, this intelligence came into existence from non-intelligence? Does randomness create complexity? Well, that's what evolution believes. So evolutionary scientists are not a bit embarrassed. They come along and they say, in the beginning was the hydrogen atom. But you know, the Bible has a different explanation. It says, in the beginning, God created. Well, where did God come from? And how can your mind envision the existence of a God who always was? Is that something that is tough for your mind to imagine? Science says it is. That's an argument they use. You just can't believe in that in a finite universe. Yet they believe in a universe in the operation of definitive, powerful, forceful laws. They believe in the hydrogen atom always having existed, in the sense that in the beginning, a quite up-to-date, modern, scientific explanation for the origin of things, in the beginning was the hydrogen atom. The hydrogen atom always was, and it always will be.
For 40 years, the Plain Truth magazine has been supplying the missing dimension in education. The Plain Truth is published monthly as a facet of Ambassador College's In the Home Educational Service. It maintains an editorial policy that incorporates this missing dimension in education, biblical understanding. The Plain Truth's timely, informative articles deal with subjects covering success in business, recreation, politics, religion, farming. Each issue not only documents the state of today's society, but offers hope for a better world tomorrow. To serve its more than 6 million readers, The Plain Truth is published in 5 languages and is available without price or obligation to all who request it. Join the growing worldwide readership. Request your subscription to the magazine with a 40-year history of educational service to mankind. The Plain Truth. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
You know, some of the little gimmicks in scientific classrooms are interesting that students are subjected to early in life. By the time you get up into college, you're subjected to a little heavier dosage of evolution than you got down in grade school. The caveman idea, the idea of people dragging women around by the hair, and of course the women's lib has got to come up with some kind of an answer to that. But we do. We get brainwashed by a kind of an anti-supernaturalistic bias all the way from the beginning days in school. We're told not the biblical story, but what are little boys made of? Well, snails and puppy dogs' tails, and what are little girls made of? Sugar and spice and everything that is nice. And this begins to create a kind of a thing in children. And then we're subjected to momism and subjected to the major hoopels and the dagwoods of society, and then to the interrelationship or the changing of sexes or sexism. And the monosexual culture of today, where people wear the same clothes. We get the family upside down. And origins are not really discussed honestly, and it's something that people just don't bring up in polite conversation. We don't ask how it all began. We like to avoid those subjects. We're in a society where it is chic to know nothing about the Bible. If you're found in polite conversation, or if you're an invited guest on a talk show, and you're found to know absolutely nothing about art, literature, science, the military, history, you're embarrassed. But if somebody asks you a question, I'm sorry, I don't know a thing about that, you're popular. I mean, it's chic. You know nothing about the Bible. What's to be embarrassed about that? Here is the book that was so believed in by the founding fathers of the United States of America. They quoted from it often. It occupied a space on the White House desk of John F. Kennedy. Presidents of this country of ours have believed in the Bible. Yet the average person, it seems, remains a biblical illiterate. So he is fair game. He is subjected to a lot of anti-supernaturalistic bias, and it never occurs to him that what he's learned in classrooms, what he has read in the terms of scientific newspaper writers, is in direct contradiction to what the Bible says. I guess what people really do is relegate the Bible to a status of ancient literature, of poetry, of the attempts of old sages long ago to right the wrongs of a nation and to bring about violent or dramatic social reform. I guess what they really believe is that the Bible may be mostly inspirational and partly history and then full of errors and contradictions, and then they just excuse it by saying, but after all, what could you expect in any book which is the combination of so many writers? I mean, they're bound to disagree, and so people say this without being able to prove it one way or the other. I don't think you need to apologize for the Bible, because I know that you can absolutely prove that it is the word of an all-wise, divine, creator being. And the idea that science and the Bible are in conflict is ridiculous. True science and the Bible are in perfect harmony. There is no contradiction between the two. Now, speculative science, imaginative science, which says in the beginning and gets into a field where it doesn't belong, that's something else. One of the ideas that is brought along in classrooms by the time you get to college age is the idea of the monkey and the typewriter that I've talked about in the past. That says that here you have a monkey sitting at a typewriter. Do you believe, it asks the class, that in enough time, if you have enough paper and given enough time, this dumb ape will by accident with his index finger type out a two-letter word? Well, at, by, to, of, you can say, well, sure, that's quite possible. And he's bound to certainly, sooner or later, hit a couple of keys together. Well, do you believe a three-letter word? And you begin to think, well, sure, that's easy. Well, what about a two-letter word and a three-letter word together? Well, that might take a little longer, but possibly. Well, do you think that he might, given enough time now? Now you're getting it up into maybe millions of years, but do you believe the monkey could have typed out a sentence? Well, by now, you know, you've kind of had it. You might not really believe that, because you might think that the paper would be gone and the typewriter might wear out or the monkey would die of old age. But you have waived all those ideas because they've told you in the beginning, given enough time. Well, now, do you believe if the monkey could type out a sentence, he could type a whole book? Well, now you're out into the billions of aeons and you're a little lost. You're out of your depth, but you still have to say, well, I don't know, maybe. Well, do you believe he could type out the entire edition of maybe the Encyclopedia Britannica and all of the entire Library of Congress? Do you believe that he could type out all the scientific journals and publications that are coming out every single day, given enough time? Well, now, if you believe that, congratulations. I don't believe that myself, because there are a lot of things wrong with it. The one big question behind it all to me that should be asked in the classroom is simply this. Where did you get the monkey? And where did you get the typewriter? And where did you get the forces and the energies of the key striking the paper? And where did you get the paper? And where do you get the existence of words? You're beginning with a static system here where you have all kinds of players on the scene, as it were. Forces, energies, limitless time, and force and energy acting in a certain preordained, orderly way. And you got a monkey and a typewriter. Where did you get it? Well, they give you the truck and the bricks analogy. Do you believe a truck backing up to a loading dock could dump a whole truckload of bricks and accidentally two of them would land one vertically on top of the other? Well, you might accept that. Well, what about 10 trucks backing up one after the other on a 100-foot precipice? Do you believe it, given enough time, they could accidentally in one day now dump maybe a 10-room house complete with the furniture and all of the electronic devices inside of it? And the key above the door and the television set already on and the fish swimming merrily in the goldfish bowl? Well, let me tell you, it would be a lot easier for those trucks to accidentally dump a house into place with the key above the door for you to go live in it than it would be for you, your body, your mind, your brains, to have come into existence by accident over a long period of aeons of time by randomness and happenstance. Well, how does the Bible fit in the middle of all of this? Can you prove by looking at that which does exist, by looking at tangible laws, not guesswork now, I'm talking about scientifically proved and demonstrated laws which you can see, that you can touch, that you can understand with your own finite mind. Can you prove there is a God in the same way that science proves there is such a thing as an atom? Can you prove there is a God in the same way you can prove there is such a thing as electricity? Can you prove there is a God in the same way you can prove there is such a thing as air? You don't see air, you don't see electricity, you can't see atoms. You can only see what they do. Yet, we surely understand and know that atoms do exist. Well, there are seven proofs God exists. Now, this booklet that we'll send you by return mail free of charge shows you these are not guesses but factual proofs. It's not a weighty booklet. It's a very short, very brief booklet that I imagine you can read in less than 20 minutes. It's just that simple. If you're discussing religion, which oftentimes is not too good an idea, religion isn't always a very exciting subject over dinner, is it? Because it tends to get into arguments and people get a little touchy about religion. But if you want some ammunition, you're discussing whether or not there is a God with a person who is mildly skeptic or really does doubt it, an atheist or a friend of yours that just can't see the proof. I've met many people, heard of many people, who have said there can't be a God because... And then they begin to talk about Vietnam, or starvation, or accidents, or warfare, or sickness, or a loved one of theirs that was a very great person, but who died of throat cancer with seemingly no cause. And people have, well, many reservations, many doubts. They wonder whether or not there really is a God. You write for this booklet, Does God Exist? If you want some real solid proofs for further research and discussion on your own part. Very tangible, easy to read, simple to understand. And it's free of charge, there is no price. Be sure to request the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, an up-to-the-moment magazine with articles on world trends and conditions that are going to drastically affect your life. Coming up, in-depth articles about the European common market, about the growing might of the tremendous trading complex of Japan, about the dwindling strength economically as well as militarily of Britain and the United States. And what, if anything, prophecy says about all this? You need this magazine. It doesn't ask you to join anything. There is nothing that is going to happen to you. No one's going to call on you. There is no bill to follow. You're not automatically looked upon as a member of something. And there is no strange, bizarre sect behind it. These are plain, common sense, straight-from-the-shoulder articles you need. And there is no obligation. The current number will have articles and interviews with leaders from around the world. You'll find that you'll enjoy it, you and the whole family. There are issues that are filled with helpful information you can use at home. Articles from our offices around the world, with articles going into the issues you meet every single day. It is absolutely free of charge. And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales.